The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If all's going well in the control room, we're also streaming this program live on YouTube. You can see some of the upgrades that we've made in the studio here. And ever since, I guess, the last, when did we do this last? 3-4 weeks ago when they had the power outage in Edmond, Oklahoma. But today we're hopefully streaming the audio to our radio station in Edmond, Oklahoma, and also the video to our YouTube subscribers. So we'll keep close watch on some of those stats and figures as the program unfolds today. We're going to try to make this program a little bit more work-centered. Today I'd like to focus on some of the recent events that have been happening in the work, God's Church. We've talked about some of this, I guess, here and there, but my father had a coworker letter on March the 11th, just a little over a week ago, that summarized some of these exciting events, the Jerusalem visit. And so we'll talk some about that coworker letter. We'll talk some about the work in Jerusalem. We've also been pulling together some material on the subject of music, just following the production of Ryan Malone's booklet, what's the title of that? I didn't bring it up here with me. Something about God valuing music. I've got it in my notes a little bit later on. In any event, I want to go through some of that material, refer you back to a program that my father did on that particular booklet, and then also we'll have some really exciting videos for today. How God values music. There it is. But we've got the three instead of our typical promo that we have separating the segments, we're going to instead play that 3-minute video that some of you might have seen at the PAC event, the online PAC event. We also, as it happens, played that in Glasgow just last weekend. And also we've put together, I think it's a 7 or 8 minute video. We'll save this for the end of the program. A 7 or 8 minute video on the history of the Robbers Cave campout, the annual Armstrong College campout that we have every year at the beginning of March. So some really exciting video to view on today's program, and that's why, if at all possible, you should switch over to the live broadcast on YouTube so that you can see some of this video that we'll be showing today. There's some other surprises, pictures and video as well, that I'll let you see as the program unfolds. I just want to refer you back to a news item as we start the first segment here, a news item that we referred to yesterday, this Rasmussen poll, or Rasmussen, I guess, from December. This was referred to at the American Interest, where it just talked about, if you remember the headline from yesterday, the rise of unfreedom in the West, and just how many people today, according to this poll, are really quite nervous about speech and what they say. This poll says today only 26% of American adults believe they have true freedom of speech. This is in the United States of America. Only 26% believe they have true freedom of speech, while 68% think they have to be careful not to say something politically incorrect to avoid getting in trouble. It says it just talked about how many hate speech codes there were at college campuses back in 1990, and how there's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them today. And so on yesterday's broadcast, all of these programs, of course, posted at the trumpet.com website and also at kpcg.fm. But we talked about Isaiah 59, a prophecy we refer to often, where it says truth fails. And then, as I mentioned yesterday, that same passage, it says that those who depart from evil, they make themselves a prey. They make themselves a target. If you say something that's outside the norm as far as society sees it, social media and the like, then you're going to be quickly targeted and taken down, if at all possible. So that's regarding the United States. Free speech in the United States. Here in the UK, you keep seeing these stories, it seems, every few weeks about someone who's being investigated or even arrested for something they say about transgenderism. The Telegraph had a story today. A second woman is being investigated by the police for what she supposedly said about or something that's supposedly transphobic. This other case, it's written about actually in National Review, talking about how that American readers, well, again, it should go and look at that story that I went through yesterday, but it refers to the Bill of Rights and the freedoms that Americans are supposed to enjoy, free speech. Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free exercise thereof, of then all these freedoms that Americans can just take for granted, speech, the press, and so on. It says here from National Review, unfortunately, British citizens enjoy no equivalent absolute protection. Recently, as the UK press has reported, a number of individuals have been investigated by police on suspicion of hate incidents. And what is a hate incident? Quite simply, speech or behavior that breaks no law, but that a protected minority group finds to be offensive. That police time and resources are being redirected from real crimes, which Britain has a lot of, to thought crimes, is not only embarrassingly wasteful, it's deeply sinister. So it then goes and refers to this case, this British journalist, Caroline Farrow is her name. And she comes from a Catholic and obviously a very conservative perspective. And she's someone who insists that a person's sex depends on the biology, not on how he or she identifies. So this journalist, she appears on Piers Morgan's TV show here in the UK, Good Morning Britain. And she's there across from Susie Green, who is the CEO of Mermaids UK, this organization that's out there aggressively promoting sex change treatments for children, for young people. And so they're going back and forth, and then following that segment on Good Morning Britain, Ms. Farrow, she tweeted out that she had a message from the police regarding her tweets following the appearance on Good Morning Britain. Evidently, Susie Green had reported her for misgendering her daughter. The article in National Review, it says, according to Green, Farrow had misgendered her 26-year-old child, Jackie, who, born male, became Britain's youngest transsexual at the age of 16. In addition, Green claims that Farrow committed hate incidents when she wrote on Twitter that the penile inversion surgery that Jackie underwent in Thailand was mutilation, castration, and child abuse. You can't even do that to a child. They have to be 18, not here in the UK. So here's a woman that takes her son because he's too young. You can do it to 16-year-olds in Thailand. So she takes her son to Thailand and then gets this operation on a child. And that's what the journalist is criticizing. And so who do the authorities go after? Well, of course, they go after the journalist. They go after someone who says, look, this is child abuse. To have this kind of surgery that you can't go back from, to have it performed on your child, your teenager, who might be very, very confused. And then they go after the conservative commentator, of all things. It says, Farrow is certainly not immune from criticism. Last month, she told me by phone that her criticisms of transgenderism have resulted in an onslaught of online abuse. And so she criticizes this act as mutilation and child abuse. And then the abuse is, it comes on her like a flood. Her home address and pictures of her children have been shared by her critics online. A website has been set up solely to criticize her on a near daily basis. One activist even showed up at her husband's church and tweeted pictures of it. Farrow found it all rather threatening. Yet the police don't consider any of it to be a hate incident. It's not hate to go after the critic of transgenderism. It's hateful. It's hate speech to criticize these acts of mutilation. Piers Morgan, speaking of that show, he pointed out this double standard in another way just yesterday on Good Morning Britain. This is clip one.
When we have a situation in the Midlands at the moment at various schools where Muslim communities have stopped any form of gay sex education being discussed at school because they say they don't believe in homosexuality. Now, that's happening in this country. And I'm not seeing the police racing down and interviewing people under caution for what many would see as overt bigotry. So there's a double standard there, too. We have Caroline here who misgendered somebody and is a subject of police investigation. But you have Muslims in the Midlands who are very anti-gay people refusing and campaigning and protesting successfully to have gay education removed from schools because they don't like it. And that isn't that bigotry?
So the authorities, he's pointing out here how that the British authorities are more inclined to fight for the free speech and the free exercise of religion of foreign-born immigrants, the Muslim religion. They're more inclined to protect that, or at least to turn a blind eye from it, than they are to protect those who are coming from the traditional British culture. You talk about the death of Britain's culture. The Judeo-Christian ethic. This is not, as I say, it's not an isolated incident. There was a case where a mom of two, she was arrested and held in jail for 7 hours, I think it was, for a comment that she made about someone's gender. The article here says, the National Review, it refers to Margaret Nelson, a 74-year-old lady who was contacted by British police after she wrote, "Gender's fashionable nonsense, sex is real." That's all that she wrote, and then the police called her. The police contacted her. This National Review piece, it says all of this is deeply sinister. What business is it of the police to prevent people from offending each other? What do they hope to gain by investigating law-abiding citizens and journalists? And she says, why aren't politicians speaking out against this insanity? The rise of the woke police is a thoroughly menacing development that will be used by ideologues and extremists to bully the general public into silence on important debates. You see, what does the verse say in Isaiah? If you depart from evil, you make yourself a prey. Where are the politicians? Where are the leaders speaking out on this? Well, there's another piece from the Daily Mail today. The Home Office, that's the government. Home Office letter quotes Bible verses to prove Christianity is not a religion of peace. This is regarding someone who is a Christian convert, I think coming from Iran or somewhere in the Middle East, but they've converted to Christianity. And in trying to gain asylum, they've explained why they came out of the Islamic religion and so on. And so here's the Home Office then coming out and saying, look, well, look at the Bible. Look at the Bible. How can you say Christianity is a religion of peace? You want to criticize Islam, and so here again, here is the government rushing to defend Islam, and yet someone that would just come out and say, look, you can't do that to a 16-year-old. It's not even legal here in the UK. How is this even controversial? Well, it's not just controversial in the eyes of the authorities. This is someone, this conservative commentator, that needs to be investigated, that might need to be prosecuted. We're going to have to keep our eyes on these kinds of stories, whether it's here in the UK or across the pond in the United States. Here again, I got into that a little bit on yesterday's program. You can get to those podcasts at thetrumpet.com. Well, let me just transition then into this coworker letter that my father wrote last week, the March 11th coworker letter. Some really inspiring examples in there, and it ties in, some of this does, to the two programs I did at the start of this week on what it means to be a doer of God's word. Not just a hearer only, but someone who actually puts this into action. He mentions in that coworker letter about the incident when he's here. We had just completed the online appearance campaign, and then we were due to leave right after that event for the Middle East, for Tel Aviv. And so the plane was waiting there in the Birmingham airport. We got a call from our pilots following the program, and the pilot said, look, we've got a problem with the starter, and we've tried and tried and tried to jumpstart the plane, but it just won't work. And so they counseled my father to just stay back, to stay here at Edstone, to not come out to the airport, and hopefully we'd get the part in the morning, and we'd just have to delay our departure. Well, as my father explains in the coworker letter, he decided to go to the airport anyway. And we had a good chat with the pilots, even while we were driving to the airport. It was a kind of a somber trip, as we thought, well, is the trip going to go forward? And then my father gets a call while we're in the car. And here again, the pilots are reiterating the fact that, you know, we really shouldn't waste our time. So we get out to the airport, we head out to the tarmac, we're right there outside the plane, we're talking to the pilots, and we thought, well, my father was there talking to them, asking about this, anyway, my father said, he concluded, well, we might as well go into the plane and have the meal, because it had already been prepared in advance. So it was while he was in there that he suggested to the pilots that they try to jumpstart the plane one final time. So he's describing that, and I know we played some of that audio for you previously on the program when we were in Jerusalem. In any event, here's this miraculous event that the plane starts up. We took all of our baggage anyway, even when they said, don't come out here. And then eventually we're on the plane, we're eating, it starts up, and we take off. And we end up just being a couple of hours late. That's it. We kept to our original schedule, but this is the point, and this ties right in with that subject we were talking about Monday and Tuesday, being a doer of God's word. My father makes this point. I believe God at times holds back in order to measure our enthusiasm and determination. Our actions greatly affect how much he will open doors for his work. That's quite a statement. God at times holding back to see what we will do to evaluate or to measure our actions. He said our actions greatly affect how much he will open doors for his work. My father says this, yes, we must be praying, but sometimes God requires that we then step out in faith. We should expect miracles. But God, before he responds, demands that we step forward in faith. We have to step out in faith. He says, faith without works is dead. That's quoting from James chapter 2. Faith without works, it's dead. And he said also, prayer without works can be worthless. We must have works. again, go back to those two programs. We must have works. Those are some powerful statements. Prayer without works, faith without works. So he went ahead. We were on the plane. The plane takes off. We get to Jerusalem, and we carry on with our plans. That Monday after the online pack, we meet with Dr. Mazar. We had a long two-hour discussion about the future of the work in Jerusalem, the prospects of an excavation anytime soon. And as my father explained in that co-worker letter, we convinced her to work to set up a meeting with us, or for us, with David Beery, who is the director of the City of David, the Elad Foundation, there in the City of David. And that organization basically presides over the whole area that we want to get back into to excavate. So going back to the coworker letter, it says, Mr. Beery told us that a new excavation will happen in the Palace of David in the next 2 years, and he made it clear that it would only happen with Dr. Elat Mazar as the chief archaeologist directing the excavation. And Dr. Mazar has said that she will only dig if Armstrong College students are helping her. So these are good friends to have, right? Dr. Mazar and now Mr. Beery. It says, so that seems to put us in a good position. We believe that dig could begin in less than 2 years. After an hour and a half meeting with David Beery, I left with a strong feeling, my father writes, that we are at the beginning of a new open door in Israel. This could be the most important trip to Jerusalem that we have made to date. How significant this is, he said. This could be our most important trip ever, and it was something that was almost put off or delayed or postponed. But he went forward, and the rest of us followed. He went forward and acted. My father did. He acted in faith. He followed up his prayers with action. And doors started to swing open. He mentions, by the way, in this same coworker letter, the successful exhibit. If you remember last year, last June, we had the joint reception between Jerusalem and Edmond to kick off the Seals of Isaiah and the King Hezekiah exhibit. My father referenced that in the coworker letter, saying that our exhibits of Dr. Mazar's work have drawn dignitaries, including U.S. congressmen, journalists, Bible scholars, and thousands of other people interested in seeing history on display. And then he mentioned 7,000 people, 7,100 now, that have visited this exhibit, which closes in just a little over a week. I think April 1st is the last day of the Seals of Isaiah and King Hezekiah exhibit. I thought it was interesting. A couple of people pointed this out to me. But this week, Prime Minister Netanyahu, he visited the archaeological excavation up in Shiloh. That's about 45 minutes or so from north of Jerusalem. And he was there touring these ruins. This was Israel's initial or original capital when the Israelites first came into the land of promise. My father's taped a couple of programs, strong programs, as I remember, from the mid-1990s, going back some 20, 25 years. But here's Prime Minister Netanyahu at Shiloh just this week, and he said, I think in some reports, he hadn't been there since 1967, following the Six-Day War. So he's there with the former Arkansas governor, Mike Huckabee. This is a tweet from the Prime Minister's office. It says, it's from March 19th, so 2 days ago. It says, Prime Minister Netanyahu visited the museum at the site, which exhibits findings from the period when the tabernacle was in Shiloh, and signed a clay shard from the era. The people of Israel live also in Shiloh. Now, what was really amazing from these tweets sent out by the Prime Minister's office was they had a picture of Prime Minister Netanyahu with his party, including Mike Huckabee, and they were looking in this picture. They were looking at a picture of the Hezekiah bulla, the bulla that's in Armstrong Auditorium right now. They were looking at this picture of the Hezekiah bulla, and someone was there in the photo explaining explaining the lettering on that particular bulla. And as it happens, it was, I forget her last name, but it was Reut who was in our video on the Hezekiah bulla, the one that we interviewed. And then she's there in that video, this one that we posted, what was it, a year or so ago? 400,000 people have viewed it thus far. But here's a snippet from that video we produced a year ago with Reut. This is Reut talking about the Hezekiah bulla.
So after some years, when we concluded the first volume of the publication of the Ophel excavation, we start again. And we saw that there is a dot between the letters of the name Malkiyahu. So it's not the name of Malkiyahu. It's the word Melech and Yehu. And the meaning is Yehuda. And then we come back to the letters that had missed, and we understood that there was the name of Hezekiah's father, Ahaz. So in the seal that pressed this bulla, there was the letters Lechizkiyahu, Ahaz, Melech Yehuda. So this is a royal bulla.
It's a royal bulla. It's Hezekiah's name right on that little clay seal. And there's Reut. We've participated in excavations before with her. She's now a distinguished scholar in Israel, an archaeologist. She's right there in Israel, in Shiloh, earlier this week, explaining what you just heard there on our video, explaining it to the former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee, and the current prime minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. Well, instead of having our typical promo advertising literature, we're instead going to break up today's program with the three-minute promo that we ran at the end of the online pack presentation and also used just this past weekend up in Glasgow. Here's that video.
The Trumpet is sponsored by the Philadelphia Church of God. Led by Pastor General Gerald Flurry, the church continues the work of Herbert W. Armstrong and the Worldwide Church of God. Like Mr. Armstrong, Mr. Flurry today proclaims the one true gospel, the good news of the imminent return of Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ is about to return to this earth. He's going to have...
He also explains how individuals can prepare for the turbulent times prophesied just before the second coming of Christ. Under Mr. Armstrong, the Worldwide Church of God achieved a powerful global work. The Plain Truth had a circulation of more than 8 million. The World Tomorrow was the most popular religious program on television and radio. Mr. Armstrong traveled the earth, sharing the gospel with dignitaries, royalty, and world leaders. When Mr. Armstrong died in January 1986, his successors abandoned his teachings and work. His legacy was revived on December the 7th, 1989, when Gerald Flurry began the Philadelphia Church of God. Today, working from its beautiful 170-acre headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma, the Philadelphia Church of God shares God's truths and Bible prophecy with mankind. The PCG owns the copyright to Mr. Armstrong's most important literature, including his seminal work, Mystery of the Ages. In addition to sharing these works and producing the Philadelphia Trumpet and the Key of David, the Trumpet produces a variety of radio programs and audio podcasts, as well as the Royal Vision. The Philadelphia Church of God sponsors the Armstrong International Cultural Foundation. Each year, the foundation hosts concerts and performances by some of the world's leading artists in Armstrong Auditorium, its world-class concert hall. The PCG also sponsors Herbert W. Armstrong College, a liberal arts institution with campuses in Edmond, Oklahoma, and Stratford-upon-Avon, England. Since 2006, Armstrong College has followed Mr. Armstrong's example and has supported archaeological excavations in the heart of Jerusalem. In 2008, the PCG created Imperial Academy, a primary and secondary school now attended by PCG children and teens from around the world. Through the work of Gerald Flurry and the Philadelphia Church of God, millions of people are able to understand Bible prophecy, the meaning of world events, and the meaning of life. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
And we are back, finally, after some major technical difficulties, both with the live stream for the radio broadcast and also for the YouTube presentation. So what we'll do in post, we'll try to put the 3-minute video or audio into the podcast, and instead of just so that we have time for the 8 or 9 minute video from Robber's Cave, we'll just go ahead and push the music segment that we had prepared for today. We'll push that back to another day since we only have about 10 minutes left for it. And we'll instead conclude today's program with the 8-minute audio from Robber's Cave, or about Robber's Cave. So sorry for the inconveniences, sorry for the technical difficulties, but we'll get those ironed out and come back strong again tomorrow. We'll see you then.
From February 27th to March 4th, Herbert W. Armstrong College students and faculty enjoyed the annual Robber's Cave Campout, a tradition since 2002. Students in Edmond, Oklahoma, drove about 3 hours to Robber's Cave State Park, an area rich with PCG history. It was at this campsite on July 16, 1989, that Stephen Flurry read the first manuscript of Malachi's message. In 2002, Mr. Gerald Flurry also revealed new revelation from the book of Habakkuk about the PCG's prophesied court case victory in the Mystery of the Ages lawsuit. The following year, at this same campsite, Mr. Flurry announced that the PCG had won the copyrights to Mr. Armstrong's most important writings, including Mystery of the Ages.
I feel that we've just won the greatest victory we ever have won in the PCG, and perhaps the greatest we ever will win as a collective body. And I can tell you now, brethren, we not only have fair use for all of the 19 works, but we own the copyrights of all of those works, just like Mr. Armstrong did.
The Robber's Cave campout tradition was established in the United Kingdom in 2015 when Armstrong College opened its sister campus at Edstone, England. Rather than returning to the same campsite each year, Edstone students and faculty travel to a different UK site each year. So far, Edstone students have enjoyed the annual campout in Wales, Scotland, Cornwall, and the Lake District. This year, the Edstone Robber's Cave campout was held on the beautiful shores of Loch Lomond in Scotland. PCG Pastor General Gerald Flurry made a brief visit to the campsite as a stopover on his journey back to Oklahoma from Jerusalem. During his visit, Mr. Flurry provided an exciting start to the campout by delivering a 30-minute lecture about the details of his trip to Jerusalem. The rest of the campout was filled with fellowship, games, and numerous outdoor activities. In this segment, Edstone AC students share some of their favorite and most memorable moments from this year's Robber's Cave campout in Loch Lomond, Scotland.
My name is Jessica Brandon. I am a senior at Armstrong College. This is my fourth Robber's Cave as a student, but I've been going to Robber's Cave since I was a child, so it's probably, 12th, 15th, I have no idea. One of the coolest things I never thought I would ever do was climb a mountain. And we climbed a mountain, which was awesome. And I didn't think I was going to make it all the way up because it was a bit of a struggle about 3/4 of the way because you feel like you're almost there, but then you're not. So it was just really kind of motivational to be like, okay, actually, like, we did this and we all did it together. Like, it was a really bonding experience because we all pushed through it together, and it was hard, but it was really fun. So that was amazing.
My name is Audrey Loker. I am a sophomore at college here in Edstone, and this is my second Robber's Cave experience over here. I think one of the most unique experiences about Robber's Cave over here that's different from Edmond, and I've been to several in Edmond, is just the hikes that we do, which we did last year in the Lake District as well. But over here is very much a group activity. You get to know people through a bit of adversity. The hike, we hiked up about like over a 3,000 foot hillish mountain kind of, and it's really neat because you just get to see everyone try to persevere through a bit of trial and adversity, but you still have a lot of fun, and it's just a unique experience that you don't normally get to do with other people.
Hi, my name is Danny Adler, and I am a junior at Edstone, and this is my third Robber's Cave. And one thing that was just really special about this year's Robber's Cave at Scotland was that it was just a new place for all of us to go to. And so we just had so many different memories, like exploring all the different mountains and everything. And when you're in such a small group, it's really great because you can just bond together more as God's family. And it's an awesome opportunity to be over here.
Hello, my name is Leilani King. I'm a sophomore studying at Herbert W. Armstrong College. This is my first Edstone Robbers Cave. I've been to two so far, and there's so much that I could say about this trip, but I really enjoyed how much of a unifying experience it was and just how family-orientated, being able to spend time with just a small group of students, the faculty, and even having one of the new members from Scotland join us. It was just a really fun experience. The movie night, which was a lot of fun, and especially after admonition from Mr. Flurry about the Entebbe raids and in Uganda, just being able to watch that, it was really educational, and just watching it with the big group as well.
My name is Parker Campbell. I'm a sophomore here at Edstone, and this has been my second Robber's Cave. Something that particularly stood out to me this particular Robber's Cave was the time we had for meditation and the opportunity just to go into some really deep thought. Even the ride up was really impactful and life-changing for me just because there was a lot of time to think about things, and that was a fantastic aspect of Robber's Cave, just the opportunity for meditation.
Hello, my name is Daniel DeSanto. I'm a junior at Armstrong College. This has been my third Robber's Cave. Now at Robber's Cave, we have a lot of traditions like hiking or board games, just relaxing, reading. But one thing that's also a tradition is skits. Now I headed up a skit on World War II. It was a comedy skit, but it was also supposed to be educational as well about how World War II developed and the national character of all the people that were involved. So it ended up being a really funny skit. It was really fun to do. We even performed in front of Mr. Flurry, which was an added bonus that I didn't expect. And it was really great, too, to have him there, to have him talk to us, to spend some personal time with him. So overall, it was a great experience, and the skits really contributed to that, too.
My name is Cassie Verbout. I'm a senior here at Edstone, and this was my fourth Robber's Cave, and we spent in Loch Lomond, Scotland this year. And something that I'm definitely going to remember and found really special was when Mr. Joe Flurry came and visited us for about a day. On Thursday night, he gave us a message and filled us in on the work that they did in Jerusalem and some of the meetings that they did. And then he also just kind of gave us a personal message toward the end and really inspired us and motivated us on how important it is for us individually and how we support the work. And so that's something that I'll definitely never forget. And it was a special moment to have him visit us there at Robber's Cave.